Hello, this is Professor David Lewis, and we're going to now cover the gospel appointed for Easter 3 in Series C. This is John 21, verses 1 through 14, with the option of going also verses 15 through 19. We'll see how far we get. First, a few notes of introduction. John 21, most commentators note that John 21 is an appendix or an epilogue to the gospel proper. If you read John 20, verses 30 through 31, it seems as if the author of the gospel is using these as kind of the closing of the gospel narrative that goes from 1:1 up through 20, verse 29, with the promise in verse 29 that blessed are those who do not see and believe that Jesus is risen, that he's the Christ, the Son of God. And so 21, even most conservative commentators acknowledge that this was probably added. There's some debate whether it was added by the author of the gospel or whether it was one of his disciples. Nevertheless, most everybody acknowledges that 21 was appended, and so it's called the epilogue or the appendix. And then the reason for that I'll discuss as we go. But in the first 14 verses, we see related another miraculous sign of Jesus, the miraculous catching of fish. There's a parallel in Luke 5, and the parallel might be explained in this way. In Luke 5, there's a miraculous catch of fish. This precedes Peter's first call to discipleship. This miraculous catch of fish then precedes Jesus asking Peter three times, "Do you, Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Which many people see as an episode of Peter's rehabilitation as a disciple. Three times he's asked because he denied Jesus three times, and then Peter's recommissioned into his apostolic work, feed my lambs, shepherd my sheep, feed my sheep. And so there's a miraculous catch of fish in Luke 5 and then in John 21. And those people who believe that John was written later and that he's aware of the other Gospels then might argue that he's intentionally relating this miraculous catch of fish that takes place after the resurrection so that people would clue in that this is very much a connection between Jesus and Peter and Peter's job as an apostle to be a fisher of men. Though here Peter's never told that he's going to be a fisher of men. Instead he's told, you know, to be a shepherd of Jesus' sheep. But nevertheless, there's a connection between the miraculous catch of fish and the call of Peter. And then you might also add the other disciples involved in this event. Okay, verse 1. Meta tauta, after these things, Ephanerosen, heotan, halen ha Jesus, tois matitais. Jesus, again, revealed, manifested in an open way, himself, the reflexive pronoun, to the disciples. And this takes place, epites thalasses, this is by the Sea of Tiberias. And then, Ephanerosen de hutos, he manifested himself, and he manifested himself thus, hirhutus, in this way, as follows. So you see the space between 1 and 2. That's Nestle Allen's editor's way of saying the story proper begins in verse 2. Eson, humu, they were together, and now we have a list of the subjects, 7 of Jesus' disciples, Simon Peter, and Thomas, followed by an attributive participle, who was called Didymus, and Nathaniel, and then it's followed by a substantive use of the article. Here you'd make it translate like a relative pronoun. And Nathaniel, who was from Cana of Galilee, Kai Hoizu Zebedio, and Hoi, notice again the definite article has been substantized, though the men, the plural guys of Zebedee, usually translated the sons of Zebedee. And interesting, James and John are never mentioned by name throughout the entire gospel, chapters 1 through 20. This is the only reference to these two disciples. And notice again, they're not named. It's simply Hoi to Zebedaiu. But the idea is that the readers know we're speaking here about James and John. And some people see a clue that John wrote the gospel that he never mentions himself or his brother by name. And they're only referenced here. And then Kai Aloi and others of the of his disciples, duo at the end of the word too. So there seems to be 7 guys who are together. Verse 3, lege. You'll see this is a regular feature through this story, that lege is used as a historic present as a way of carrying the story forward. And so Simon Peter says, historic present, said to them, hupago haliuem, I am going to fish. I'm going fishing. Here we have the present infinitive active of haliuo. Here it's purpose use. I am going in order to fish. Legusim, notice the historic present, they said to him, Erkamatha kai hemes sum soy. Notice hemes, we don't need the pronoun, so this is making it emphatic. We ourselves are also going with you. And so, exelphon kai enabesim es ta ploion, and they departed, and the heiress from Enbino, and they embarked into the boat. And then it notes, and on that night, Epiasa and Uda, they caught nothing. I remember hearing a radio preacher preach on this text, and he tried to argue that Peter was actually sinning by going back to his old vocation of fisherman. And so the other disciples are being dragged away into his sin. And I don't know if you can read that into this. It could simply be that they're hungry, and they're fishermen, and here's one way to satisfy their hunger. Let's go catch some fish. Or maybe they're bored and they don't have anything better to do. This is taking place in Galilee now, where we know from Matthew and Mark they're supposed to go to meet Jesus. They're going to see him there. And so this could be just a way of filling their time. But it is important to note, the last clause in verse 3 is that on that night they caught nothing. So even though Peter is an experienced fisherman, nevertheless, no success, fishing all night without success. Okay, verse 4 begins with a genitive absolute predicate participle clause, proiaste heide genomenes. This is our aorist participle middle from genomai. And so I make this temporal. So after it had already become morning, este Iesus, Jesus stood, eston aigialon, upon the shore. Then ou mentois, the conjunction here, nevertheless, they did not know, the disciples did not know. And notice that eidaison, this is a pluperfect, indicative active, third plural of oida. But remember, oida, it expresses its present meaning in the perfect, and so the aorist in the pluperfect. Nevertheless, the disciples did not know, hate, indirect discourse. And now indirect discourse, whenever the verb of knowing, perceiving, is expressed in past time, we have to adjust the main verb of the hate clause back one step. So here the esten will become a was in English. They don't do it in Greek, but we have to do it in English. The disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Lege. Notice again, lege, historic present. Then Jesus says to them, paideia, children. Ray Brown translates this as lads. But notice that when this is evocative from paideion, but notice that when he addresses them in this way, he's assuming sort of an authority over them. When I was in the Army, sergeants would generally call us enlisted guys son, and I always thought that was a way of exerting authority. I'm the father, you're the child, you need to do what I say. The paideia, meti prosphagion ekata, notice the question. And now notice that the main verb here is indicative, but it's preceded by a me. And notice that there's a te after me, and so some might suggest this was supposed to be mete, but if you go with Nestleon, it's literally, have you caught any fish? Prosphagion, have you caught any fish? But the main, when preceding a question, gives us an expectation that the answer should be no to this question. Meta would be a little more forceful. So this could have the literal sense of sons, children, lads, you haven't caught any fish, have you? Expecting a negative answer, right? In other words, this kind of shows this guy is somewhat of an authority because he's standing on the shore and he knows they've been unsuccessful and he addresses them as paideia. And so, and they answered him, no. Verse 6, ha de epen, autois, ha de, change of subject. So this is now, the disciples answered no, so now it's Jesus again. And he said to them, balete, throw esta dexia mere, onto the right side to ploy, on the right side of the boat, the net. So throw the net on the right side of the boat. Notice that ta dexia mere is plural. This tends to be, the root is meros, it's a third declension word for side, but the plural tends to be used whenever you're expressing the side of like a body, a house, or here a boat. This just seems to be idiomatic. You use the plural. Literally it's on the right sides, but in English on the right side of the boat. And then kai huresete, and you will find. In other words, and you will find fish. So notice that this guy on the shore, they don't know that it's Jesus, but he sort of assumes authority. He addresses them as lads. He knows they haven't caught any fish, and then he tells them how to catch fish. And notice that they do what he says, Evalon Un. Then they cast, and Ukite Auta Helkusai Iskuan. And now the main verb here is Iskuan. This is an imperfect of Hiskuo. They were no longer able, it, probably referring to the net, helkusai, aorist indicative active of helko, they were not able to drag, to draw, to pull it. And then the reason is expressed in the prepositional phrase, apa, to plethus, tone, ikthuon, from the crowd of fish. And so the apa here seems to be giving cause because of the abundance of fish. They're not able to pull the net. One interesting thing to note in this verse, notice before Evalon, the text critical note, some texts have tried to insert what Peter says in Luke 5 here into this section of John 21, obviously probably in an attempt to make this even more parallel with the Luke 5 account. You can read that down in the text critical notes. But now notice verse 7, lege, again, that's historic present, beginning this verse. Lege un, then that disciple, which disciple is this? The relative clause that begins with han explains, whom Jesus, agapa, this is the imperfect from agapao, Jesus used to love, or Jesus continuously loved. Then that disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, Hakurius Estin, it is the Lord. This is kind of interesting. He's the guy who runs to the tomb with Peter on the day of the resurrection. He's the one who begins to believe when he sees the empty tomb. And he's the first one also to notice that it's Jesus. It is the Lord. Then Simon Peter, akousas, aorist participle, after he had heard, or just simply hearing, hata, another indirect discourse, so we need to adjust the estin. When he had heard that it was the Lord, tan ependutein diazosata, he put on his outer garment, and this is explained, and gar gumnas, for he was naked, probably not stark naked, but he was stripped for fishing, probably wearing a loincloth. So he puts on his outer garment and he casts himself into the lake. And this seems, a lot of people say this seems to be one of those eyewitness features that just captures Peter's sort of impetuous personality. He finds out that it's Jesus, forgets everything, and jumps into the water and begins to swim to shore. Then notice in verse 8, where does this leave everybody else? Well, they're the ones who have to drag the net in. So, Hoida Aloe Mathetai and the other disciples came in. Ploia Rio, notice synonym for ploion, this would be in the boat, in the small boat. For they were not far from the sea, Allah, but hos, as from about 200 cubits. A cubit, if it's 18 inches, this would be, 300 feet, about 100 yards away from the shore. And they come, Surantes, dragging the net of fish. Okay, so Peter gets out of, he doesn't get out of the work, as we'll see, but this seems to be, catching Peter's personality, just gets dressed, jumps in, and swims ashore. Verse 9, hos un apebesan, and then as they disembarked, apabino, from onto the earth, they see, again, notice the historic present, they see a charcoal fire line, kemenane, set, a charcoal fire set, and fish line, obviously on the charcoal fire, and bread. So notice two miracles so far. First, the miraculous catch of fish, and then when they get to the shore, there's already fish cooking that they didn't catch. And so Jesus says, well, maybe he just went fishing earlier and caught this fish, or you might say he has miraculously provided this food as he did with the feeding of the 5,000, only here now for his disciples. But notice that this breakfast is already set. 10, lege autois hi Jesus. Notice again, lege, historic present, lege. And Jesus said to them, and ekate, here we have aorist imperative, bring from the fish which you now caught. And then on a bay, then Peter getting up, probably into the boat, embarking in the boat. Then Simon Peter got it, embarked into the boat and dragged the net onto the earth, full of ichthuon megalon, big fish. And then we're given the number 153. And notice we got here another genitive absolute predicate participle clause. Tasun tone, on tone, and although there were so many, I take it concessive, the net did not tear. And so you might say, here's now a third miracle. The net doesn't tear, although there's 153 big fish. Now the number 153, D.A. Carson in his commentary says this simply shows another eyewitness touch, you know, that John, the author, remembers how many fish were caught, 153. There's been a lot of debate about the symbolism of that number. Jerome makes the point that Greek naturalists said there were 153 species of fish. So you have 153 fish, which means this, if this is symbolic of the disciples, you know, preaching the gospel, people from every nation, all sorts of people are going to be saved by the gospel. Other ancient readers try to see some, they say 153 is divisible by 17. 17 is the Ten Commandments plus the seven gifts of the Spirit, or the nine gifts of the Spirit plus the eight Beatitudes. And Augustine probably honestly says we can't really figure it out, although he tries, you know. But in other words, notice that there are a lot of fish. And one of my students suggested the other miracle is that Peter's able to drag this big net by himself from the boat, or it could just be that Peter was really, really strong. Here we are, and let's see. And so the net's not ripped, and then verse 12, legeo tois Jesus, said to them, come, aristaisete, have breakfast. Okay, now no one etoma, no one dared, no one of the disciples dared to ask him, who are you? And then we have eidetes, perfect participle of oida. I take this as causal because they knew, another indirect discourse, we have to adjust Destin back one step in time, they knew that it was the Lord. So this is kind of interesting, this third appearance that John records. Once the disciples don't have a clue who he is when he's on the shore, but now that they're on a shore, they're firm in their knowledge that this is the Lord. This is the resurrected Jesus. Now, notice verse 13, we have three historic presence. Erechtai, Jesus comes, and lambanai ton arton, and he takes the bread, and then kai didosen, and he gives to them, and likewise the fish. And so, if the historic present is to show emphasis or sort of a vividness, Jesus comes, takes the bread, and gives it, the bread to them, and likewise the fish. And Ray Brown sees here sort of a reference to Eucharistic language that he argues everybody in John's community would have clued into. So it's not like this is the Eucharist, but Ray Brown tries to argue that nevertheless the whole Jesus taking the bread, everybody's going to hear that as Eucharistic, as having a Eucharistic image. But the point being that the resurrected Jesus, who washes his disciples' feet the night before he dies, after the resurrection, we find not them serving him, but him serving them breakfast. So I remember when I had to preach on this text, well, I didn't have to, but I called the sermon the first Easter breakfast. Now, I know this isn't Easter Sunday, but nevertheless, you know, it's resurrected Jesus making breakfast for his disciples. And then verse 14, this triton, now this third time, notice F von Erothe, now it's aorist passive, Jesus was manifested, was revealed in an open way to his disciples after he had risen from the dead, from the dead guys. Okay, this is the assigned text. I don't think we have time to go on to verses 15 through 19. But as to what the significance of this is, especially if this is an appendix that the author chose to write later on to add to his gospel after he had concluded it in 20:30 through 31. Here I'll turn to Craig Kaster's Symbolism of the Fourth Gospel, pages 134 through 135, where of this he writes, the significance of the catch emerges when it is read in connection with the feeding of the 5,000 and its aftermath. Jesus had told the multitude He had said that no one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him or her. Now here Kayser's talking about the verb helko, which is the verb for what the disciples do in pulling the net. No one can, unless the Father pulls, drags, draws, no one can come to Jesus. And now we have that verb used again when the disciples are pulling this net full of the fish that Jesus has helped them, caused them to catch. Kayser goes on, the statement recognizes that coming to Jesus is a human impossibility, but it also promises that people can and will be drawn to him by the power of God. At the end of his public ministry, Jesus identified himself as the one who did the drawing. He said, I, when I am lifted up from the earth, will draw, helko, same verb, all people to myself, in 12:32. In this passage, as in the previous one, the impossibility of faith is offset by the promise that the crucified and risen Jesus would draw people to himself. The story of the great catch shows that Jesus would accomplish this drawing through his disciples. Without Jesus, the disciples were no more able to produce a catch of fish than people can produce faith in themselves or anyone else. But in response to Jesus' directives, the disciples were able to bring a catch to Jesus, anticipating that through them, Jesus would make good his word to draw people to himself. And so Kayser agrees with Ray Brown that one reason for this appendix is the telling of this miracle with the significance that the church's mission will also be accomplished through the authority and the power of the risen Lord Jesus Christ. That we're not on our own, but that the success will come. It'll be Jesus working through us as disciples through his church. On the other hand, you might say that the lesson of them fishing at night is that if we try to do it on our own steam, apart from the way Jesus has called us, you might say, as Lutherans, apart from word and sacrament and gospel, there's not going to be that success that the Lord gives. But the success comes when we do it according to his directive, as he has called, as he enables. And so that the mission that we as a church perform is the mission that the risen Lord Jesus Christ performs through us. And we're no more able to create faith in a human being than we were able to create it in ourselves. It is God the Father through his Son Jesus who accomplishes this miracle. And then you might say at that church breakfast, what the Lord also does is he continues to be the one who serves us and cares for our needs. If you go with Ray Brown and see that verse 13 is not Eucharistic, but it would certainly reference the Eucharist, it is in the Lord's Supper that our Lord, we come to his table, he's the host, he serves us. I would say that's probably a secondary step away from verse 13, but with Ray Brown it is very interesting that you see Eucharistic language used. Nowhere does John actually show the institution of the Lord's Supper, but Ray Brown says that it's hinted at, and one place he'd say it's hinted at here is in 21:13. Thank you.